Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the March 22 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and from Morton, Illinois, and Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Chip Nellinger. Let's start with you, Chip. On Thursday, President Trump announced that he would be putting forth tariffs that amount to somewhere between $50 and $60 billion on Chinese goods imported into the United States. There's a list of about 1,300 goods. Most of them, we assume, though we've not seen the list and package just yet, are probably technology related because it's intellectual technology that he's looking to get the Chinese to stop stealing, or in those words, or from him, from the U.S. Most people believe that the Chinese at some point will react and that the retaliation will be aimed into the red counties of the United States. A large portion of those would produce soybeans. That's one of those products that most often is imported into China. Of course, we talk about that all the time here on Commodity Week. However, the Chinese haven't reacted yet, and even then, the grain trade did not react today. Why was that the case, do you think?
Well, I'm in the camp that the big break that we saw earlier this week on, was it Monday? The easy excuse was it rained in Argentina. And it did, but it was a small enough area. It probably didn't do a lot of good for them. So I think that this was pretty well telegraphed, at least to the amount, maybe not the specifics, that I think part of the big break on Monday and then a little bit of weakness after that was somewhat built in. And you know, on the one hand, I think the market realizes, in reality, especially with the drought in Argentina, China has to take our beans for the foreseeable future. That doesn't mean that they won't come out and talk it down or make a statement that it's going to be beans, maybe try to break beans 30 to 50 more cents and buy them the whole way down in the cash market as that happens. So I think the market's still going to be really nervous about this. But until you get a response from China, I think, it's kind of digested in the market. If it's beans, they've said maybe sorghum as well. Maybe there's another flush out coming. But on that backdrop, you also have now estimates out of Argentina, sub 40 million metric tons. So I think if it weren't for this Chinese deal, beans would be rallying back towards the highs. But there's uncertainty there. And the hard part is it's not gonna be next week, next month. This might be months and months that we try to sort this whole Chinese trade thing out. So this might be something the market deals with for a long, long time.
Kurt Kimmel, you're shaking your head in agreement.
Yeah, I think there's like a 60-day public review on this. It's a process. But overall, our trade deficit with China is like $357 billion. So President Trump's trying to put a little bit of a dent in it. When you look at the exports back and forth, unfortunately, beans is at the top of the list, $15 billion worth. So they're going to target something that's, at the top of the list, unfortunately. However, though, when you look at Chinese bean demand, they use 110 million metric tons, and they only raise 14 million metric tons. So they're at the mercy of the world market to buy everywhere. The reaction, the dollars, the amount, we'll see. But they've got over 700 million hogs. They market over 485 million head of hogs. And they're upping their hog production because kind of hard to believe this will be a long-lasting impact. It's more of a negotiation back and forth. Their end users don't want this either because it's going to drive the price of their beans up in their country if this goes through and they target beans.
Wayne Nelson, Chip mentioned that there was rainfall over the weekend in Argentina. His thought was that the drop on Monday probably not as much related to that as maybe is looking forward to today and the Trump administration announcement. Did the rainfall do very much to help that crop?
It stabilized in some areas, Todd. I mean, we look at there was a lot of things in the last. It's not going to up the crop, but it's going to stabilize some of what's there. And then we sort of pulled back, and so a lot of the moisture that did fell in areas that isn't really the big crop areas, too, as we looked at it like that. And if we looked as the week went on, the weather forecast was supposed to be coming in this weekend, you know, move to the non-crop areas. So that's very much so. You know, and as far as the rain being part of it, yes, it was part of it. So were the rains out west in our wheat belt that helped a little bit at that point in time that changed the attitude a little bit. But I think I say there was that, there's this tariff idea. And we got to remember, along with these tariffs, look at what's happened. At first, we were going to slap them on everybody. And now Mexico isn't going to get the aluminum and iron. Canada isn't going to get that. Other people, the European Union, they thought they'd slap a big tax on our corn, and they import 1% of our corn, so who cares? But I mean, it's all a game. President Trump likes to play with the chessboard, and he likes to move the pieces around and see what he can use. There was a comment come out on the wires this afternoon that said that the NAFTA negotiations are going much better now after they knew that he was serious about putting some tariffs on a few things. And if they could, they are more congenial about talking about NAFTA now than they were to begin with. Things that they were never going to concede to are now we're seeing a few concessions. So we've got quite a bargain person in our president right now.
So we're looking forward now then to the growing season here in the United States. Wayne, and I'll stay with you for just a bit on this one, because producers have their crop insurance in hand. They've made the decisions there, probably thinking they're fairly well protected. I think for soybeans, at least, they have some forward sales made, probably. If they haven't, do they need to move ahead, and to what level? And let's say they're 30% or 20% sold at this point. Do they need to be further along than that?
Well, we're between 30% and 40%, depending on the individuals. And I do think they need to be at those levels now before we get going. $10 makes his money. Most of the guys can get $10 beans. There's lots of ways to put a bottom in this market, along, not too expensively if you're willing to put a top in this market. But, you know, all in all, as we look at things, if we do come in, we do raise we do plant 92 million acres of beans, we do have good weather, beans aren't going to be above $10 come fall.
Yeah, most definitely. 30% to even up to 50% priced is part of the reason you get the crop insurance, so you're covered somewhat there. But on the remaining balance, or if you're not there, we like the $10 price floor. That way, if tariffs hit or we have big acres and favorable weather, we have an 800 million bushel carryout, you've got some downside coverage, but your upside's open, on bushels. So I think you got to be flexible in your marketing plan, but use some good money management, risk management strategies.
Yeah, I agree with both these guys. We took advantage of it as well, advised being towards a third priced. We also bought another third in June short-dated 1020 bean puts. That gives you till the third week in May. We did that for 20 cents or less. And we're going to sit and see what happens here. If we're gonna gamble on anything, in our minds, it's easier to build a bullish case in corn than beans. So we're going to be a little more aggressive on beans. Hope we're wrong, and then we go to $11, because then we've got a lot of revenue on new crop corn as well.
We can start to make the transition at this point, but we probably ought to make the pivot there. The prospective plantings report and how it divvies up corn and soybean acres.
Well, the most popular and probably dead on to what degree we're fixing to find out next Thursday is basically a million more bean acres and a million less corn acres. What that does to the supply-demand balance sheet, just plug in those numbers and you got to pick a yield. But the bottom line on beans on favorable weather is going to be quite high. Corn-wise, it's a game changer from last month's supply-demand report. We saw a smaller carryout number. You carry that into the 2018 crop year, a million less acres, trend line yield, all of a sudden you're down to 1.7, 1.8. A little weather, we're down to 1.5, and that's a marker maker.
Yeah, Kurt's right. I mean, as we're looking at it, and I took one of the charts out here that Allendale actually put out, and if we would cut the yield, the national yield, to 163, you know, we're down to a 1.6 carryout. if we can figure along the way things go. And so that, you know, it's a game changer. We can get it under 2, but if you can get it under 1.8, it's a real game changer. And we can see that 450 mark on the corn, maybe 5, but we don't want to predict that yet.
So producers, I think, and the analyst, I know, have been getting friendlier to the corn market for the past month or month and a half. Give me the fundamental reasons why that should be the case.
Well, I think because along the way, as we're looking at, like we said, we can get that carry out down. Our livestock numbers around the world have been going up. We're seeing China continue to chew through their corn, making ethanol. And in fact, the matter is, they won't have enough corn if they do produce all the ethanol they're talking about. And they could actually become importers of corn as well as beans. So that, and we've had some droughts around the world as we look around. You know, look down South America this year, they're also going to be drawn down. So I think that the safrinha corn didn't get in on time, or maybe not all of it planted. That along with, we still have a chance of some problems. I think there's a little bit of a drought situation out in the Southwest now. You know, we see that in every weather map we look at. There's a big brown area out there. It's got some rain as of late, but a lot of things going on as far as weather could happen to draw down the corn.
Yeah, I would add that the game changer to me was this market. The corn market thought maybe back in August, September, we'd be maybe at a 2.5, 2.6 billion bushel carryout. We're going to end up at 2.1 and change on old crop, a 14.8 billion bushel demand. So Kurt mentioned it earlier, and Wayne did as well. If you plant a million less acres, I'd even be more aggressive. If that 14.8, 14.7 demand, which we know price will ration if we go higher, but you assume this 14.7, 14.8 demand, plug in a million less acres, you could realistically see us closer to a billion bushels than 2 billion bushels in the carryout a year from now. So in my mind, that's what's supportive to the corn. Doesn't mean we're going to go straight up, but I think that we're going to be well supported on breaks. And, you know, in my mind, it's just much easier to build a bullish case in corn than it is beans.
Bottom line is, the cure for low prices has been low prices.
Well, thus far, yeah, but overall, though, we're actually seeing total acres go up a million or 2 million acres overall in planted acres. That's a little bit of a concern, but we'll see what the overall fallout is on that. The thing is, the trade finally has something to be excited about, not only the U.S. number, but world numbers. We were looking at about a 230 million metric ton corn carryout worldwide. We're seeing that probably under 200, if not dropping down to 190 million metric tons. And that's a huge drop in percentage-wise. So if people can get excited about a Bitcoin, they can get excited about corn.
Well, you may have just answered the question I was about to ask you. So what makes you all think that the way you're viewing the corn market and the demand that's being built will come from U.S. exports when 40% of the market is all that we now maintain? And in the late 90s, early 90s rather, we had 90% of that export market.
That's the problem with U.S. grains. We've lost world export share, and we've given up that share to other countries in the world. But the exciting thing about corn is, last fall, they were talking corn exports were not that good when traditionally they are not that good in the fall. In the spring, they changed their mind when traditionally corn exports pick up. That helps somewhat. But not just corn, DDGs. Ethanol strong worldwide, and above all, feed usage, true feed usage is strong. So it's all three of those components together is going to help maintain that strong 14 billion plus usage base. Now, we're just not going to go screaming to $5 in here. We're talking a little bit longer term.
So are we talking 420, 450? What do you think December corn goes to?
Well, over the near term, if we can get everybody's yard brown and get the corn to roll up a little tight here this summer, I feel during this growing season, if we get the commodity funds wanting to add to some long positions, futures-wise, 450 is not out of the question, but we got to see what Eric and all those guys on the weather guys have to say.
Well, Todd, I'm a little bullish corn because 7 out of the last 10 years, corn has went up after the March 30th report.
Well, that's maybe a good reason. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other fundamentals. Ethanol has been on a tear for, I think, more than a year. What does consumption in that area look like, and how much usage do we have?
Yeah, well, you mentioned exports. Exports have been the weak link for a couple years, and now they've caught fire, partially because what you said, low prices cure low prices. We got low enough, we got competitive, we stimulated demand. At the same time, though, ethanol and feed demand have been cranking along, and their record as well. What are we, 5.1, 5.2 billion bushel total demand on ethanol, 5.5 billion on feed, hogs and cattle, just on a long-term expansion here the last 12 months. And so that part, you know, you put those two together, ethanol and feed, you're talking, 11 billion bushel. You know, that's 60%, 70% of the total usage, and they are just cranking along at record clips on ethanol and feed both.
How have each of you changed your thought on marketing plans from December 30th to today?
Well, I think that number one, the prices are a little higher than we were looking for. We were pretty depressed in December. I mean, not thinking that we were being told that we were just had gut load of things, and the weather in South America helped us bring some of that back. I think that also when we went through and looked at the last government report where they cut or increased the corn usage and cut the carryout on that, that helped a lot. What has been a little bit of a wonderment to us is when they raised the bean carryout to 550 and beans still continued to be bought by the funds. So, you know, but they continue to buy this. They are the market mover out there now, folks. They're like Cargill and ADM used to be. So they're pushing this bean market.
Grain marketing plan worked fairly well, actually. You know, a little bit of pat on the pat here. You know, for guys that needed cash flow or had commercial storage, we moved it and replaced ownership and picked up some extra pennies there. The market worked well to continue to make some cash sales. I mean, bean basis has been a little bit of a problem all around, but you know, Hedge Your Eyes and some other programs have worked fairly well here to give you that coverage. But on new crop, you know, we met our price targets on the upside. Now we've moved to the point of $4 price floor on corn, $10 price floor on beans, and sit back and see what happens.
Yeah, I think the way it's changed is that now you can, with these changes we've talked about and the bigger demand, cut and carry out in corn, that you can be a little more patient in corn, especially now on old crop. We had the rally, and so guys generally had better yields, and then they got a nice 30-plus cent bounce off the lows, so they were able to recapture some of the revenue, one, in a price bounce, two, because they have better yields. But I don't think it's changed dramatically, but I do think, you know, still just the way we think of it is beans are profitable as far as new crop goes. Let's get more aggressive on those, whether it's sales and or part of it puts. I wouldn't do all in sales right now. Get a large percentage of your beans covered because the revenue's there. And then if the bottom falls out, it's going to fall out more in beans. So you got more to lose, in my opinion, in beans to the downside and more to gain on the upside in corn. And we've got the whole uncertainty of acreage, planting, and growing season, pollination weather. So that's good and should give us opportunities in corn out into summer.
Next Thursday, there are two reports that are due out. Of course, the prospective plantings report, but the grain stocks numbers are coming out as well. They'll give us an idea of how much grain is on hand in the United States. The USDA generally surveys, I think, more than 9,000 places that store grain. So they get a pretty good census in terms of what is here in the commercial side. However, they don't have really a good view of what might be left in the bin, and there's an awful lot of bins out there for storage this year. What do you think those numbers will look like, and do we have to watch them as much and as carefully as we do the prospective plantings numbers?
Well, I think it's probably half and half, because if you really boil it down, you know, a million acres of corn at trend line yield is 170 million bushels on the carryout. Okay, so yeah, that matters, but not as much as your final yield does. So I think they're equally as important. They're going to be big because we had big crops. So the market's expecting record large amounts, but always the uncertainty is the feed demand, right? Because we get the ethanol numbers weekly, we get the exports weekly, pretty much have those zeroed in. And so analysts then back in to say, what is feed demand living up to what it needs to? So it is very important on the stocks. As important as the acreage, in my opinion.
livestock numbers been big enough, good enough, long enough to eat through a lot of the crop?
Well, a good chunk of it. Probably what we'll need to do is make sure on Friday's cattle and feed report confirms we got that extra 8%. Poultry numbers are high. Hog and pig reports expected to show another 3% increase. So, yes, we're true feed usage is there. And you just don't liquidate unless the western pastures turn dry and you'll see a lot of cattle come to market.
Well, you know, the guesstimates for this year is going to be an 8750 compared to an 8622 last year on the corn. So, I mean, if we were near that or below last year's, I think then with the increased livestock numbers that Kurt was talking about, we can say we can use some of this down and we can pull that on down as long as we keep the exports going. But I think it's going to be very, very important to see that we did use the feed that we are considering here. If not, it's going to keep that carryout number high, and that carryout number is what kills us as far as making a top or what that top's going to be.
Again, those numbers are due out on Thursday of next week. That's the 29th day of April, and they come out at 11 o'clock. You can find them on our website at that point. We try to post them into our Twitter feed as well, at Commodity Week, if you want to follow it at that time. And I'll post the supply and demand tables in their completion to the Twitter feed and up at willag.org, so you can get a good look at what those numbers look like for the grain stocks and for the prospective plantings. And frankly, I have to go back and look at my spreadsheets because I think I'll have a state-by-state breakdown and the way those have changed. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens across the United States, and we'll run through that at this point, where we think changes might happen here in Illinois all winter long, and maybe you have a good feel for this as well. I'm thinking when I've asked, 5% of the producers have said in Illinois, we're going to put more soybeans in. What that translates into acres, I don't know. Todd Hubbs told us yesterday at an Outlook meeting that he thought maybe 300,000.
Yeah, I think at least 5%, as we talk to people. I think if it is 100,000 in Indiana and 200,000 in Illinois, 200,000 in Iowa, or something like that, I think the big swing is going to come out of the south, out of cotton. And that's number one price, but that was determined back in November, December, as they get equipment rounded up. And a rally in corn probably isn't going to change that because corn prices are quite a bit higher. So I agree with you. I think there's a small shift to corn just for rotation. I think the big shift's going to be in the south out of cotton, and I think it'll be a million or more.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this all falls out. The main thing would be the market reaction, because those analog computers are going to be reading those headlines, whether it's the bullish or bearish stocks, and they're going to see a bullish or bearish acreage number. But overall, winter meetings suggest more acres in general. It seems this here, even the Corn Belt, some guy was looking at an extra 40 or 80. So it's going to add up how much we're going to find out.
Wayne Nelson, my gut feeling after driving to Fargo, North Dakota and back last year and seeing all the soybeans, from Des Moines over to Route 29 and all the way up, and what I thought were far more soybean acres than should have been there, that we saw actually in the USDA numbers as well. I'm wondering whether those acres might translate into more corn acres than we think, or if they'll go to spring wheat or someplace other than the soybean.
That's going to be a good question, Todd, and I say that out of depends on you know, are they going to have the moisture to want to go to something different or whatever along the way? I think that they've had such poor basis levels in those areas that it might go back to wheat.
And if it does, what happens?
Well, it's good for the bean price. I mean, that's going to keep that. If we can take, you know, how many thousand acres out of that never get planted, acres that aren't planted don't yield well.
So these are some of the things that we have to go through fundamentally to look at. Again, I want to go back through with you, and this time we talked about soybeans, but to get kind of an idea of what producers should be thinking about, old crop corn and new crop corn, and we'll begin to wrap the process up at this point. So let's do old crop corn because there's a lot of it in the bin. We've had a pretty friendly discussion on Commodity Week for the last 3 weeks. They're probably thinking, hey, I want to hold on to it.
Well, I think that old crop's the toughest because it's case by case. Do you have storage on farm? How long do you want to hold it into summer? I think in general, you have to use this rally and sell carry and reward the rally, especially if you get a little bump here after the USDA acreage report here next week.
Yeah, I agree. You got to reward the market in through here. A year ago, we topped here 1st of March and broke 20 cents. Well, we've already broke 20 cents, so we'll see what happened. Weather's the thing. But you got to get to where you want to be because there's something big going to happen. We saw options move higher or more than the futures did this week. For example, today corn was up 1.25. The options were up 1.75 at the money. You do the same strike price. You buy both of those for the week. The corn options were up 4 cents. The futures were up about 1.5 cents. So somebody's nervous somewhere. It's not often you see options move more than futures.
I like Chip's idea about selling the carry if it's in your bin at home. You know, if they're willing to pay you, you know, storage plus more for a July or June or May shipment, I take advantage of that. Put that extra 10 cents in your pocket and go ahead. But go ahead and price a lot of it right after this report, because 7 out of 10 years, we go higher after this report.
And for new crop, should they do anything at this point?
We've got about 30% sold in the new crop. We're sitting really sitting on top of the new crop. We're not doing anything with that right now as far as the corn goes. I think that, both the guys agree here that maybe the beans, it's time for a put there because we don't know what's going to happen. But as far as the corn, I think we can see less acres. I think we can maybe see a little bump on up. And let's get to where we can maybe get 4, 410 or 420, maybe cash bean or corn.
I think you got to have orders way above the mark in case we get some type of bullish news where you see a quick 20, 25 cents up or something, but otherwise just be patient.
Yeah, we're generally about 10% priced on corn, 408 to 410 range futures price, December futures. Using this break to buy a few courage calls out there in the December, and then we're going to be scaling higher on the next rally. Seasonally, typically, you still have some upside potential into the end of April. Planters start rolling. You put a break in, and then you put your summer high in third week in June. So we watch that every year. I think from a calendar, you use that late April and then late June. Rallies there to scale into sales, especially if you have some calls bought from lower levels.
And let's get a final word from each of our panelists this week. We'll start with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, we've got a big report coming up next week. It's going to tell us the direction that we're going to go for the summer or look at things until we see the weather change. We would like to be a little bit covered on the downside on beans. We're going to leave our corn wide open and look for a little bit of a rally.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
There's a lot of market in front of us. I believe volatility is going to pick up. I believe you just got to have be in a position to take opportunities when they arise.
And Chip Dellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I agree with both these guys. We're big proponents of having a plan. Write it out. Know what you're going to do ahead of time. This volatility, we've seen big swings already, right? Bigger than what people expected on corn and beans both. But use that volatility. If you sold beans at higher levels, use the break to buy some calls or corn. If you get a big rally, use that to buy some puts or make some sales. Use the volatility in your favor, but you got to have a plan ahead of time to do that.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online and listen to us on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. All of our agricultural programming is there each and every business day, from the opening market report to the closing market report, everything in between. And we also feature the Farm Doc Daily team. That's the agricultural economist from the U of I on our willag.org page. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, which include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.